Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the Podcast.
You've got to believe.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Oddcast, Movies, Music and Gaming. Here with me is Dan. Right, Dan?
Hey, man. It's me, Dreadful Dan G, ready to do some odd shit.
Yeah, it's going to be really fucking odd shit today. And there's definitely going to be a lot of dread, full of dread, for Dreadful Dan. Today, we're going to be talking about the film, The Witch, otherwise known as The Witch, released in 2015. Let's have a quick listen.
What went we out into this wilderness to find? Leaving our country, kindred, our fathers' houses. For what? For the kingdom of God. Let us pray.
I should say the reason why it's called the Witch is because in old ye day language, that's how W's are written as a double V.
Right, yes.
So that's why it's the Witch on everything. It was like, what does it say, the Witch? Is it the witch or the Witch? It's because it's trying to be oldie time.
Yeah. So I
that's
remember
why, that. But I think we should just keep calling it the Witch from here on end.
I think if it is old English, it's just witch. Because actually, yes. I studied a little bit of this back in the day. Oh. Did some old Middle England texts, and there's a lot of stuff about killing witches. Basically, that was the big thing for a couple of hundred years.
Sure,
that was like the version of Big Brother was just people want to know about, is there a witch? And if there is, did we get them? And how did we die? How did they die?
Exactly. Well, let me give you a bit of context on the movie, and then we'll talk about how we experienced it, and then we'll go into a little bit about the plot and
good idea.
Stuff, bits and pieces. So this was released in 2015. It's by Robert Eggers, who is one of my, because of this film, which is his first, but also what he's done since, such as Lighthouse, he's one of my favourite hot new directors, basically. Really fucking great. It's got Anya Taylor-Joy in. This is kind of, I want to say, like, she's been in a lot of stuff since. For me, I always feel like this was her, like, big break. Ralph Ineson, I don't really know how you pronounce that. He is always from The Office for me, but he has been in bits and pieces. But what was his name in The Office? It wasn't Begbie, obviously. It was something like...
Begbie?
No. What was his name in The Office? I can't remember. But he was the equivalent. If you watch American Office, he is Michael Scott's mate who was in Anchorman, who's like the sexist, loud, horrible thing. Anyway, he's...
Finchy,
that was it. Well done, mate.
Chris Finch.
Yeah, Chris Finch. And then, yeah, you've got the lady, I think it's Kate Dickey. I've got it up in front of me, so I should know. Yeah, Kate Dickey, who at that point was basically known for being in Game of Thrones. She's in a few episodes. It was around the same time. And then you've got some other people, Harvey Scrimshaw, Ellie Granger, and Lucas Dawson, who are basically the other kids. And it's a film set in the 1630s in America, with the new settlers there. Basically, there's some strange goings on, which we'll get into. It did super well. It was at the 2015 Sundance Film Festival. And then A24, who, in my opinion, is the best movie studio to work for at the moment for many, many reasons. They're doing the coolest, most cutting edge, most innovative movies of all time. And if I could get a job anywhere in a movie place, it would be A24.
Wow. Okay, cool.
For sure. Definitely. And yeah, it had a budget of $4 million, very tight, for something what it is. And it grossed over 40 million.
So, no way. That's great. Yeah,
so seen as a huge success, and for good reasons. It's fucking great. So Dan, tell us a little bit about your experience of this film and what led you into it.
I also thought it was great. I think it had a fairly decent advertising campaign here in the UK.
Mm, it did, yeah.
I remember seeing posters for it, maybe even saw a trailer or something. I just thought that looks intriguing, looks up my alley. I think I liked the look. You know, stark black and white, kind of almost a bit washed out, like that pretentious art house look.
Yeah.
Appealed to me. I didn't know anything about the director, I don't think, at that point. So that was it. And then I heard some, reviews and a bit of buzz. And yeah, I thought it was great. Loved the tone of the film. You know, it's quite some people might say slow. It's sparse on dialogue, so it's all building up atmosphere, tension, and when certain events do occur, they're quite shocking, visceral, brutal. So it does work emotionally. Really had me gripped throughout the whole film, and some of the imagery is phenomenal and really, really stays with you. Mm. So all of that combined, yeah, just make for a great piece of film, I think.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I heard basically from the Sundance buzz. I used to, not so much anymore, but basically I used to keep tabs on any like good horror that happened at any of the festivals, basically. And this got a lot of buzz around it, I remember, from Sundance. And people were saying it's like the horror movies of old, where it's a slow burn. It stays with you. It's more disturbing. It's not, it has like a, as you said, kind of a couple of shocking moments, but generally speaking, it's very slow, which it is. And and I remember I took my wife to where we went to uni, basically, which is where we met. I won't say where, just in case people bothered and want to track me down for some reason. And
people going to do a pilgrimage of your...
Yeah. Just trying to give away too many personal details, just in case. Because I'm always getting hacked. That's the problem. So I've been hacked so many times that I'm just a bit more aware of it. But yeah, we went and I did like a little tour of our uni. She was pregnant with our first. At this point, she's about halfway through the pregnancy. And then we went to the cinema that we used to go to, this little indie cinema. And I really wanted to see The Witch. And she relented, even though she hates horror films. And to be honest, I think it was the first and last horror film we saw in the cinema together for years, for like our entire relationship, it feels like, because she just doesn't go to see these kind of things.
I can't imagine seeing that. That helped. I've learned over the last few years, seeing quite a lot of my friends having babies, there are certain films that pregnant women just do not want to see.
Yeah, and we'll come to that. but yeah, that was a bit unexpected. To be fair, she loved the film. She thought it was really good.
That's good.
But that's the problem, is that she point blank would not watch any horror, and she misses some fantastic films because of it. Like I think the only thing I got to get her to see afterwards was Us. And the only reason she saw Us is because she saw Get Out, which isn't really a horror. It's you could call it horror, I suppose, but it's like, it's not, it's more thriller kind of horror.
Yeah.
And she's always like, oh, whenever you say thriller, it means horror. It's like, well, and I didn't get her to watch Get Out. I was just like, it's supposed to be good. She's got a lot of chat about it, like whatever. It's like so she watched that. And then we watched Us and she really liked Us. And I was like, Us is pretty horror. It's more horror than Get Out is. And she enjoyed Us, but yeah, she misses out on like a lot of these movies because she point blank doesn't watch it. Anyway, went to see The Witch at the cinema, and I also remember it as well because we met up with my friend Ross, and that was the last time I ever saw him, unfortunately. So it always, like, it's weird because it sticks around. He died of a brain tumor. Not to get too dark about this. A few months afterwards, because he was going in for his last surgery, and it was like, you'd already gone in for some surgery. It's like, you'll be fine, and taking the piss, because it's like they cut out like a big chunk of his brain.
Christ.
And it's like, oh, you know, and he was still fine. Like, he couldn't do things like drive or anything that, you know, posed a risk to others or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're like, God, you know, you're already thick to begin with. Like, how much of your brain are they gonna, you know, you're not using it all anyway. Blah blah blah, whatever. And unfortunately, he never recovered. And yeah, that was the last, not to get too down about it. So weirdly, this kind of plays into like that weekend and that day, basically. So I very specifically remember watching this film and the day surrounding it because of that, which is very strange. I know, it's
just really weird, some real significance for you.
Yeah, it's weird. So it kind of... sticks out a lot. And also, like, the fact that this was how do I put this, because of when it was released, I judge how long it's been since that happened by how long it's been since I saw the film, if that makes sense. So it gives me a sense of time. It's a weird way of saying it, but yeah, so I loved it. I watched it, I loved it. I thought and then after this, I know that Ari Aster, Robert Eggers are mates, basically. And it was because of The Witch, and because I heard Robert Eggers say stuff about Ari Aster, who went on to do Hereditary, that I went to watch Hereditary in the cinema, and I loved that, blah, 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 blah. That's away 24 stuff as well. So
I didn't realise he did that as well.
What?
Hereditary.
Robert Eggers didn't do Hereditary. Ari Aster did. So him and, like, they're like A24's, like, cool kids, basically. Like, I think they knew each other at film school or something like that. I think they're friends, or I might have made that up, but they did a podcast episode together on the A24 podcast, which is pretty cool, where they basically suck each other's dick, essentially. But it's worth it. But
so what else has he done, other than, you mentioned The Lighthouse?
Yeah, well, that Lighthouse was his last big one. That's basically,
which I still haven't seen.
It's really good. Like, The Lighthouse, like, he uses the same DOP, I believe, but The Lighthouse has some of the most amazing just shots in it that I've ever seen. Yeah, apparently he's making another film called The Northman, which is a medieval epic. And it's got some, apparently it's got some cool people. It's got Nicole Kidman, Bjork, William Dafoe, Anya Taylor-Joy's back, Alexander Skarsgård, Ethan Hawke. And yeah, apparently he's also developing a miniseries based on the life of Rasputin, which would be interesting. So, yeah, it is interesting. And I know, like, he was talking about, oh, maybe I want to do a comedy to do something a bit different. But I think it's a bit like, I think you're right, just, you know, do your thing.
Yeah. But a lot of directors get to that point and they're like, oh, I feel like I've kind of done that. I'm going to try something else, and then fall flat on their face.
Yeah.
It's like, stick with what you
stick with your stuff. Yeah. So should we take a bit of a break and then what should we do? Should we go into like the plot a little bit and then talk about more of the stuff around it afterwards?
Yeah. Plot and some of the key scenes.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it. So, Dan, what should I do? Should I take you through the plot? Because I saw it more recently. So, basically, it opens out, and this is, I'm interested in what you think about this, basically. So I should say, before I begin, I actually read the script.
Wow.
In preparation for this, because there's a few bits, there's a few scenes and all this stuff, and a few descriptions of the scenes that... I feel like add a bit more context to stuff I wasn't quite sure about when I watched the film. So it's quite interesting. Mm. So this whole like opening sequence is a bit extended in the script. There's a bit more dialogue. It's not really, doesn't really add anything. It's just, you see there's a lot of quiet moments in the lead up to when they get to the forest, which are a bit more back and forth between it. So I like the fact they've kind of cut some of this stuff out, basically. But yeah, so what happens is it's 1630s New England, and there's this there's a bunch of English people, William and his family, and he's got, yes, him, his wife, they've got a little baby, they've got a pair of twins, a daughter and a son. And this is kind of what's interesting is because when you're listening to it, you see it from Anya Taylor-Joy's perspective, and she seems to be, you don't see, this is what's great, is that you don't actually see, I can't remember if you don't see him at all, but you hardly see William arguing with the people who are judging him. You're seeing it from the perspective of the, essentially the children, the family, just kind of like sitting there listening to it, which I thought was quite interesting. It's talking about like sin and all this stuff. And basically the dad is sounding off on how the settlers aren't Christian enough. And I'm not 100% sure what's happened or whatever, but he seems to be like, I don't know, like it's a Puritan colony, but he seems to be like even more about the exact word of God, whatever, than the rest of them. So they could be doing something or other, and he's like, he's too hardcore. But he's kicked out basically with his family.
They're ostracized from that.
Yeah, which
community
Which during colonization is pretty much a death sentence, because you know you to fend for yourselves in that kind of time and place is not great. But anyway, they go off, and you see them like venture away, and there's a shot where you see like a couple of. Like Native Americans kind of wandering into this like town and looking back. And I always wondered like why that shot was there. And I'm never quite sure. And I thought, is it because they are showing like that initial kind of threat in a sense of that is a traditional threat in a sense of like cowboys and Indians and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, are we going to go down this kind of like, you know, it's them going out and maybe the Native Americans would do something. I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure what that is. I also thought they were quite like macho and masculine, and it cuts to like Anya Taylor-Joy looking at them. And I was thinking, is that like is it a sexual thing? Cause that kind of comes up quite a lot during the course of the film. I'm not quite sure.
Maybe both. Yeah. Maybe both. It's a little bit that, like, they're dangerous. And that's what makes them sort of sexually appealing. Mm. But I think it does, like you say, you know, they're ostracized from the community. They're out there on their own. And then just a little thing planted here for the audience, just so there's that little bit of tension now in the back of your mind that, yes, there are natives who might be hostile to them.
Yeah, exactly. Even though there's nothing to suggest that, because they're just literally just walking into the town. But the doors close, whatever. And then you've got these great few scenes of them, like, by a campfire, like, trying to eat some food, whatever. Then you see them praying to this extremely dominating forest. It's just this, like, wall of trees. Mm. And the music. So I've got the vinyl here because I absolutely love the soundtrack to this movie.
Nice.
It's crazy, like, how well integrated this music and how, like, insane some of it is and whatever. So you've got this extremely, like, yeah, this wall of trees that just, like, looks just so dominating over this, like, tiny family praying up to it. And then it jumps through time and they have settled now, but the crops are dying. It's all, like, it's not going very well. Everything's, like, a bit shit and run down, where he's obviously tried to, like, put it together. And this is, like, and also this is kind of a general thing throughout the film, is that his masculinity and his ability to be a father is constantly tested throughout the whole thing. So yeah. The fact that, like, the crops are shit, the fact that everything's, like, run down or not working properly or whatever, it's just constantly testing him. But he is just, like, adamant. It's like he is, like, the voice of God kind of thing. Like, his true belief will set him free, etc. and all this.
And that's where you start to get that foreboding of, like, you can see his pride's too big and he's going to take a fall. You can just feel it. You know, this guy, he's losing control. And the way he responds to that loss of control is, it's not good. Basically,
yeah,
he responds with, like, aggression and inflated ego.
Mm. Well, you wonder if, like, there's a shining moment coming here where he's, like, going to let loose or something. Because as well, you'll notice he's, like, chopping wood. And there's a comment that comes up later, which is, like, the only thing you can do is basically chop wood, which is kind of true. There's just this racks of, like, wood, which actually kills him in the end. If you remember, he's, like, buried in all this wood, as if, like, buried in his, like, shit labor or whatever.
Yeah.
There's some kind
futile,
of
meaning there. It's futile efforts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's all that going on. And then basically, you kind of see, like, the family working, you know, as much as possible. And then this is the bit which is horrible. So basically, Tommen, I think, what's her name? Is it Thomason? Is playing peekaboo with Samuel, who's the little baby. And it's this great shot where she's like, yeah, peekaboo. And as you see the baby giggling, and then peekaboo, suddenly the baby's gone. And it's this great shot. She's like, huh? And she looks up and you're seeing her POV. And there's just so great. There's just this little rustle in the bushes. It's as if, like, someone's just gone through there or something. So, she's like, she starts screaming and shouting. And then
it's horrible. Yeah.
You are with the figure, and it's this, like, hunched figure kind of trying to make its way through the woods. It's all, like, fucking, you can't really see it, but it's like some kind of, like, you know, old punk hunched kind of creature, whatever, kind of going through. You stay with that creature and you basically go, you'll notice that, I can't remember if it cuts away from it or whatever, but this is where it's one of the most horrifying things, where it's the baby kind of, like, giggling and gaggling, and then you see this old woman, you see, like, some old hands, whatever, and you can't really see her properly. And she basically, like, is playing with a finger against, like, the little baby's posh belly, and then it hard cuts into, like, her with a fucking pedal and mortar grinding in this, like, sludgy, red, gunky stuff, which is the baby, which you're just, like, horrified by, because you're like, fucking hell, like, she's literally grinding up this baby. And then there's all this, like, music kind of going on, making it more and more intense. yeah, she's starting to spread it on her broomstick. And then she kind of spreads, puts it over herself, and you just see her slowly rise into the moon, and then it cuts. So let's talk about that sequence a little bit. It's really weird how this film, that's the climax basically of the film, in the sense of it is, instead of like with normal other horrors, especially old horrors, if you think of like Don't Look Now or whatever, it ends on, it ends on the big visual thing. It ends on the payoff, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas with this film, it starts with the payoff and the rest is the aftermath, which I always think is really fucking bold and really intense and great. There's that. The second thing is that obviously she's old and horrible and disgusting and all this stuff. But in the script, she actually is like singing things and she's kind of like talking with the baby and all this stuff. They've cut that, and I think that's for the better. It's just like, it's just kind of like the music and the things happening. There's nothing to distract you from it, which is, I thought was good. And yeah, also, sorry,
go on. That would sort of humanize that character a bit too much as well. I like that it's still very obscure or shrouded in darkness and mystery.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And then, yeah, that whole thing of like, babies and using it to, it's essentially, that was what the old folklore was, is that how witches could fly is they would basically use newborn blood and rub it onto the broomstick, and that's what made the broomstick fly. That's where it came from.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So another thing, I guess, like we should have said this up front, really, was all this stuff, everything that's in this film was taken from actual accounts, eyewitness accounts, like folklore, true tales, if they be a thing, that even is a thing, and loads, and just the guy, Robert Eggers, just did tons and literally years of research digging into old text. He would point blank just lift exact sentences and words from text to use as dialogue. But all this stuff is based upon what people, because obviously, and this is kind of what I love about it as well, is that people think of like, we have a certain thing through pop culture and all this stuff of like what a witch is and everything. And it's all been put through this like lens of like making it a bit more family friendly or whatever, to a degree.
Pointy hat and all that.
Yeah, exactly. And there's certain stereotypes, certain things that are to do with it, right? But this was taking it back to like, what did people think witches actually were back then? What are some of the tales? What were some of the things? Yeah. And you have to remember as well is that part, like, because it's like, it's a new world basically, and people were terrified of it and the dangers of it and all this stuff. And they are the foreign force coming in. But there's something like mystical, magical and all this stuff about it. But yeah, it's based a lot in fact.
That's what's so cool about that foreboding forest. And like the fact that she comes presumably from out of the forest and is, like you said, that all you see is like rustle and she's gone. It's sort of, you know, on a psychological level, it's signifying that sort of like fear of the landscape and the new environment.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And also with that rustle in the bushes, what adds to it, and this is what I love the most about film and that it allows film to do this, is when it plays with time. So because you know, subconsciously, and they do this in The Shining, funny enough as well, which I'll kind of come to, you know, subconsciously, by the time it took her to close her eyes and say peekaboo, there is no way a natural person could have come from nowhere, snatched that baby and wrapped back into that bush within the course of like 2.5-3 seconds. Yeah. So because that's happened, you already know there's like something supernatural and it's already disturbing you in your head subconsciously. Yeah. There's one thing, and they do this in The Shining, and people imagine it's purposeful, but no one's actually kind of, no one's, I guess, 100% sure, but just because of who Kubrick was, which is when they show you the layout of the hotel when they're following Jack Nicholson, it doesn't make sense. So you naturally, as a film goer, as an audience member, your brain is automatically, when you see things like that and people walking through scenes, like when you think about Alien or whatever and things like that, your brain is automatically making a map. You're mapping things out. And then when something doesn't make sense, it's subconsciously making you feel weird. Something's off and you're not really sure why. And that's because something isn't matching up to what's going on with that your brain has done. And in The Shining, there's specifically one thing where you'll notice Jack Nicholson, who randomly is reading a playgirl, not a playboy, playgirl, is taken to see like the manager guy, and he goes to it and you see it all, and you see like the walls and all this stuff. And then at the back of this manager guy, there's a big bright white window with like the outside there. Now, the way that you've been led in there, it doesn't make sense because there shouldn't be a window there. Like, so why is that there, basically? And that's what I always think is like, that, you know, that always kind of sticks out to me, because it's like, yeah, the fact that it's these things that your brain, that's a, I would like to think that's a purposeful choice to make you feel weird, that it doesn't make sense that in the middle, literally in the middle of the hotel, there's a window looking outside. Because it doesn't make sense geographically.
Just these little touches that build a sense of unease in you.
Yeah, exactly. And like how The Shining does that with space, the witch is an example of how it does it with time. So anyway, kind of going off on that. So this is kind of like the start of the downfall, people are like, oh, like a wolf's got it or something like that. Like, you know, they're not really sure what's happened. Obviously, they're never going to find it. You know, it's dead, which is, you know, horrible. The mum is obviously devastated. And then you've got Tomlinson is kind of like, oh, you know, fuck. Everyone's blaming me and all this stuff. So that's kind of like part of her. It's the first step towards her downfall that's been kind of pushed on her rather than her feeling it. And one of the scenes actually open up, I think it might happen before the baby thing, with her basically saying that she has been having like unholy thoughts. She's been, she needs like the grace of God, whatever. She's like completely God-fearing and all this. And she's, you know, part of this film is about her coming of age and being like, becoming an adult, literally turning from a little girl into a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of talk about that throughout the film. So it's quite interesting. But anyway, they decide that the dad, William, and the son, Caleb, are going to go and see if they can, basically there's no food. So they're going to go and see if they've found any animals in the forest that he's set up traps for. And as they go there, Caleb is like, and this is where it gets interesting. Caleb's like, oh God, will Samuel go to heaven because he wasn't baptized? You know, what will happen? He's died a sinner, which is what they believe.
Yeah.
Basically, like, William's like, yeah, probably. Like, I can't tell you for sure. Like, I'm not God, but I can't say he's definitely going to heaven. And Caleb is like freaking the fuck out, basically, because it's like, I don't get it. It's just horrible.
Dems the rules.
Exactly. At the same time, they find the reason why he's keeping the hunting stuff a secret is because he's traded his wife's silver cup to kind of get the stuff in. So he's kept it a secret. So there's already this kind of like secrets within the family. And the silver cup will play a part later on as well. I also think the fact that it's a cup, which is seen as a feminine symbol, is quite interesting as well.
Is a cup a feminine symbol?
Yeah.
Because it's like a
V.
A V.
No, not flying like a V. Like it's a guitar. Like a cup is seen as a feminine symbol. Yes, indeed.
A receptacle.
receptacle. So they're kind of going around, and you see like there's these shots of this like frenzied rabbit, which I always thought was quite cool. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's horrible. Anything with animals in distresses me.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they did it, because I'm not sure if it's supposed to be like possessed by the witch or if it's the witch herself, but it's got these like crazy orange eyes.
As far as like little touches that just make you feel uneasy and start to build up. This worked for me.
Mm.
I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, exactly. And then they come back and they haven't said anything about they've been going hunting or anything like that. I don't think they find anything either, which is a bit annoying. And then there's this question of this cup comes up. It's like, oh, has it been stolen or whatever? And everyone's like against Paul Thomason. Blame her for like everything and the fact that, Paul Samuel disappeared and all this stuff. There's talk that basically William, the dad, is like, maybe we should send Thomason away because she's like old enough to actually work for a family now and we'll get money that way. And it's like, oh God, it's horrible. And they hear it.
Yeah.
And obviously hit her and Caleb or whatever, really upset about it. I should say, like, Caleb is like checking out his sister's tits. So obviously she's, it's kind of, the reason why it's doing that is because she's now becoming, they're showing you that she's now become sexualized in a sense of, obviously this kid's like growing up as well. He's got nothing to look at, if you know what I mean. It's not, and whatever, it's poor sister, but also the fact that it's like the male gaze has like begun, like she started to like be sexual or whatever.
Yeah.
Which kind of plays into it a little bit later on as well.
Yeah.
So instead, Thomason, Caleb is like, oh, he gets a horse ready. He's like, I'm going to go into the forest. And I don't really know why he does this, but he's going to go check the traps or whatever. I think the idea is to be like, look, we don't have to send her away because I've got some food. I don't know. Like, we can sell it. We don't have to like get money this way to eat. We've got the food. I think it's kind of what he's going for. But he wants Thomason to stay, obviously. So as they go back into the woods, they find a rabbit, actually, I believe. And they're like, yeah, cool, okay. And then they're coming back home. And this is quite this nice back and forth where it's actually like a moment of calm and relaxation as they're going through the forest. There's no threat, whatever. And she's saying how, like, do you remember, like, glass, basically? Do you remember we had, like, a glass window? And he's like, I don't remember. And she's like, yeah, you remember, like, the glass. And it was like, oh, you know, the dad was sleeping in the sun or whatever from the glass because it was making him warp or something like that. And he's like, I remember that, but I don't remember the glass thing. And I think, so again, that's kind of like pointing out the stuff, the little minor things that they're now, little luxuries, which is really a luxury that they're now like, they haven't got anymore. And I wondered why it was like, you know, a window or a glass specifically, I would say that that she used as an example. I don't know if there's any meaning behind that. I know people say, you know, well, I don't know, like the windows and the idea of the other side and all this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Or thinking what you said earlier, I mean, it could just actually be a specific example taken from a contemporary text.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's possible. But yeah, so they see this rabbit again. The dog runs off to get the rabbit. The horse gallops away, basically throws Thomason off. She passes out and Caleb has gone off after the dog, after the rabbit. So this is when it gets a bit weird again, which is pretty cool. Caleb basically starts going through the forest and finds this weird like house made of sticks, essentially, and then from out of it comes this very voluptuous witch, but woman, basically. So she's all like very boobalicious. And she's coming out, but all like her teeth are like fucked up and like old and horrible. So there's this element of like, she's a bit dirty and grimy and disgusting, but she's like overtly sexual. And
heavily sexualized, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he's teasing her in. And because we've already seen him like checking out, things we know that he's like got these like sexual thoughts.
Up for it.
Yeah, exactly. Like through his like sin, basically. If you want to go down that way, she's like teasing him in. And it's this great shot where it's all like very slow. She comes and she like lays this like seductive kiss on him. And then, vroom, like jump scare, kind of almost like this old, disgusting hand like gets the other side of his head. And then that's it, just cuts to black. And you're like, oh, God, like you don't know, and you don't know what's going to happen to him or anything, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, this is a good bit.
Yeah, it was really great. And then, yeah, so the dad is like, oh, God, I've got to go find them. Where are they? And all this. And yeah, finds Thomason in the woods or whatever. And she's like, oh, Caleb. And again, she kind of gets blamed for the fact that Caleb's now missing.
And that's harsh,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, and the mum is like shouting at her and all this stuff and talking about this fucking silver cup again. And the dad is like, okay, look, I took it and I sold it, okay? You know, it was my fault or whatever. But yeah, like Thomason's getting a hard time, basically.
I mean, she can't be held accountable for, you know, what is essentially a randy teenager.
Yeah, but she is. And that's the thing, is that she's kind of getting the blame for absolutely, absolutely everything. There's also a moment, I don't know if it's happened yet or if it happens earlier, where he falls over in the mud. Oh no, it's already happened by this point. The dad falls over in the mud. And then the wife is like, oh, change his clothes. Look, he's all muddy and stuff. And Thomason is like undressing him. And I remember like when I was watching it going, is this like a sexual thing? Because it looks fairly innocent, but it's a bit weird. And then what was great is in the script, it's like, yeah, it's like that. It's quite intimate and it's something that she's too old to be like doing now and all this stuff. And I was like, okay,
yeah,
I'm glad that the script kind of pointed that out, because I was wondering that. It's a little bit weird and awkward, and obviously that was on purpose. So anyway, as she's kind of outside, she hears something. I can't remember what she's just walking around, and she finds Caleb basically like naked and just like leaning up against a fence. And that's quite a cool image, I remember, because you're just like, what the fuck is that? And it's him. And yeah, so they kind of like take him in and he's all like shivery and stuff. And during this whole time, the twins are like playing with Black Phillip, who is this black goat. And they're saying, they're like whispering in his ear, and they say they're talking to him and they're singing songs about him. And all the songs are like saying like, oh, King Black Phillip, he's the king or whatever. And he's so great and all this stuff. He's like, oh, powerful and all that. And everyone's like, shut up. Like, stop mucking about.
I love Black Phillip.
Yeah.
I love he's called Black Phillip.
Yeah.
I love that they sing to him everything about him.
Yeah.
But of course, you're already, you know, you're like, oh, God, here we go. We know this isn't going to end well.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a scene where she's trying to, like, milk the goat. And they're, like, accusing Tom, and she's like talking about how she's talking to the twins about how, you know, oh, are you really speaking to the goat? And they're like, yeah, but you said you were a witch and you were going to kill me, because there was something, they had like a little thing earlier where she was pretending like she actually stole Sam or whatever. She's like playing up to like,
yeah,
being the witch or whatever, being a witch. And then they're like, no, you said you were a witch. Like, you're going to, oh, she's going to get us, whatever, and all this stuff. She's like, just joking, like, chill out. She's like, but seriously, it's Black Phillip. Like, are you actually, like, what does he say to you? What's he talking about? And then, yeah, she looks down. She notices that she's milking the goat.
She's milking the nanny goat.
Nanny goat. Yeah, it's just like blood. It's just coming out. Yeah. It's a bit horrible. There's also a bit where, I can't remember which bit it is, but where she like comes out in the middle of the night, and in the script, I think nothing happens. Or maybe that's when she finds Caleb. In the script, there's a bit where she comes in and sees Black Phillip humping another goat.
Oh.
Quite roughly, apparently. I don't know how they would have filmed this, but she like just watches on like a bit too long than she should do. So as if she's been like sexually aroused by Black Phillip, basically.
Yeah. Or just intrigued. Another goat.
Yeah, well, exactly. One, but I think it's supposed to be something a bit, you know, strangely, you know,
strangely seductive erotic
about it. Yeah, in its own
way. Maybe they cut it because it wasn't, they couldn't do it.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe there's a deleted scene out there somewhere of them running around trying to get this goat to hump another goat.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
And it's somewhere barging around and knocking cameras over, and everyone's going, oh, Black Phillip, what are you up to?
Been at it again.
He's going, just forget it, scrap it off.
Scrap it off. Um, Yeah, so they there's another bit around this time as well where they hear I can't remember which bit happens in which bit. So I know that Caleb basically freaks out. He coughs up like a rotten apple and everyone is going crazy. And he's like, he's saying stuff which I remember, and this was the scene that I actually didn't like so much because I thought his acting was pretty bad at this point. This scene that he does, it felt very like Amdram and I didn't like it. I didn't care for it. I mean, I know he's just a kid, but still. I'm not really sure what's happening, but he seems to be like in this like thing of like, oh, she's inside me, she's tearing me apart kind of thing. Like I could feel her fingers inside or whatever and all that. So it's this like quite this visceral kind of, you know, imagery, I suppose, that he's conjuring up. And then he gets all like, euphoric and talking about like Christ and proclaiming yourself for Christ and all this stuff. Now he's doing it in a very weird manner. And I remember thinking that when I was watching the film, reading the script, they do say that he starts like touching himself like erotically, like he's being turned on by the sensation of like Christ and all this stuff. Which I was like, yeah, it could have been, it was a bit too subtle almost. It would have been, I just felt like this scene didn't live up to its potential. It's the one bit where I cringe basically whenever I watch it.
What you've just described there starts to sound a little bit over the top to me.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I like that some of that, just burgeoning eroticism is, you know, it's quite subtle and in the background. Otherwise, this could end up like a scene from The Exorcist.
Yeah. It's just weird. It's this weird, like, monologue that he comes out with, and it's like everyone's watching him. It just feels quite out of place, but anyway.
So is this where they first actually formally kind of accuse her?
Yeah,
after so this is where it's been like, spewed up, and the twins come in, I think. And
that's right. The twins are like, she said, like, she was a witch. She said it. And they're like, whatever, you're talking about Philip. You're the fucking witch. And she's like, no, look. And they start rolling on the floor, which I imagine is in mock pain, not real pain. But they're like, stop her. And anyway, William's like, there's no way I've brought up a witch. There's no way this could happen. Anyway, they all kind of run off. This is where it starts all going to shit, basically. And he's like, oh, well, when we take you back, we'll put you on trial. Basically, it's something everyone knows those don't necessarily go so well. But she calls him out and she's like, you're the one that's been fucking lying. Like, you're the one who got us thrown out in the first place. You're the one that's done all this X, Y, Z. You want to send me to another family to work and all this. And he's like, whatever, shut up. So he basically, if I remember this right, he shuts them all in with Black Phillip and basically boards it up. And he's like, oh, if you're a witch, then, you know, you're a witch. Basically, he's like, you're all going to get boarded up together because I don't really know what to do. We'll sort this out later. And then this is where it starts. Like, this is kind of the beginning of the end, even though you don't really think it will be, but it kind of is. And that's what's weird as well. This whole thing feels like it takes place like past the kid being taken. It feels like it all takes place over the course of like a few days now. Like everything's happening very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So there's this whole bit where the witch basically, it cuts between one and the other. The witch basically jumps on top of this place with the goats and is seen like milking the goat, and he's like all like laughing and manic and horrible, and it's just this disgusting kind of like reveal. But at the same time, the mother is having these visions of the baby and Caleb, and she's like, you know, she's got the baby back and all this, and it's quite horrible and disgusting, because it's like really fucking creepy. It's like, oh, you'll see us soon, mother, or whatever, and all this stuff. She's obviously been beckoned to like die.
Yeah, it's all just so upsetting.
Yeah, and it kind of ends.
It's really
on
well
this,
done.
Yeah, it's really well done. It ends on this horrible thing where she thinks she's like feeding her baby, and it's just a crow.
Yeah,
just biting a fucking nipple and all this stuff. It's a really horrific image.
That's what I kind of went. That's what I was thinking of actually when I said there's some great imagery in this film.
Mm.
That's the image that stayed with me.
Yeah, stayed with me as well. It's horrible for so many reasons.
And it's so brilliantly framed and shot. Like that little scene would just work so well as a still photograph.
Yeah.
Just dripping with imagery and
yeah.
Fantastic.
It is really fantastic. So this is all kind of like being built up to, and that's kind of like the climax basically. And then the next morning, she's in bed. The mother's in bed with her like bleeding nipple, but she's like awake basically and like keeping her eyes open. And then the dad gets out and looks down and sees basically all the boards have been like broken apart. The goats are all dead. Thompson is just kind of lying there like what's going on? Yeah. And this is what's quite cool is that I think the twins have died as well, but I don't know if you see that because they don't come back. So I'm guessing they're dead as well. Or maybe they don't even, I can't remember. Maybe you don't see their bodies or anything. I think they've just disappeared. But whatever, they've broken out or something like that. I don't know. The twins aren't there anymore. And they don't appear for the rest of the film. I don't think it's ever really explained.
Quite good again as well, though. It's just like, yeah, if you'd seen them being killed or something, again, it starts to get a bit over the top. It's like confusion. And
yeah, the last thing you see is still them seeing the witch, basically.
And it's still a bit like, is this still nightmare or dream or reality? And
yeah,
people are coming and going. You know, Caleb's come back and he's gone, and now the twins are gone, and it just starts to become a bit sort of like nightmare-y.
Yeah, very much. And anyway, like William's kind of like looking, and he's a bit like what he's done. He's like, oh God, like what the fuck's happening? And he's now like, oh, you really are a witch or whatever. And she's like, no, whatever. And then this is when Black Phillip just comes up and fucking impales him with his horns. He does it kind of twice, but he jumps up on like two legs. He becomes this like massive, dominating, weird, human-like figure. It's, again, a really striking image, even though it's just a goat on two legs or whatever, like rising up. Still fucking horrible. I also think there's something, I know you'll laugh about this as you do usually, but the fact that there's something to do with him being gouged by a phallic horn or something, as in, you know, I don't know, like he's been essentially emasculated or whatever at the final bit. And yeah, having all that wood that he's been chopping on just dumped on his head afterwards, yeah, as you said, it's like the futility of it all. It's just not man enough or whatever. And also, like, and that's kind of the thing, like, he says, like, right before this, he has this little speech where he's, like, talking to God or whatever, praying. That's another version of saying that. And saying how, like, oh, I should have stayed there. What have I done? I've doomed my family and all this stuff. My pride. It's like, yeah, you're right. It was your pride, dickhead. Should have shut up and stayed with the colony and none of this would have happened. But yeah, so now you've got this, other cool bit. So the mum comes out. It's like, oh, what have you done? And then it's like, you know, you killed the baby. They killed the twins. They've gone, whatever. Caleb's dead. You took him into the forest. And she's like, and then she starts saying about how, like, oh, I've seen how you've trying to seduce, like, Caleb and your father and all this stuff. So now the mum's like thinking, you know, you're a bit of a slut or whatever.
Horrible. Like, yeah,
really goes out. And she's like, no, mummy, I love you, whatever. It's a really tragic scene. And basically she starts getting, like, choked. And then Thompson finds, like, a hook or something and, like, stabs her, like, clean through the face. And then basically keeps going until she dies and falls off her. So now everyone's dead. Thompson's just by herself and everyone's dead. And she's, like, covered in blood, which is really horrible. So then she goes to, like, I think she goes to, like, the stable or something. And what is it? She goes to, like, the table and just falls asleep.
Yeah.
And then she wakes up and it's dark. And I loved that because I was like, they had just got up. So she's obviously slept all day, whatever it is. And now it's nighttime. And that makes it even creepier because obviously it's nighttime and it's dark. But as in, like, there's no one there. Everyone's dead.
Yeah.
Like, literally, she's just by herself. And that's horrible in itself, even for what's about to happen or what's just happened. She's now completely alone and isolated and whatever. Then she goes to the stables and she talks to Black Phillip, who is a goat to begin with. And then you start hearing a human voice and it says, like, oh, would you like to live deliciously? Do you like the taste of butter, which always stays in my head as a sentence, and all this. And, like, all you have to do is, like, write in this book. And yeah, basically she literally sells her soul to the devil. And there's part of me which is just thinking, it's that thing of, like, she's been, I don't know, like, well, I'll kind of get to the end of this and then I guess we can kind of discuss about this whole end bit. But yeah, she says name in the book. She walks off into the forest where she's naked, following Black Phillip. And then there is this, there's a bunch of witches basically in the middle of this forest and they're doing all these, like, weird dancing and all this stuff and everything. Yeah. And then they start writing. Yeah, in the nude. And then they start around a fire. And then they start levitating and dancing up. And then Thomason basically goes up and she's, like, euphoric. And that's the end of the film.
Yeah.
And that's it. So tell me what you think about that ending and anything you think it meant or any, you know, or just general thoughts, I guess.
We'll get visually and everything in terms of content. It's really stunning and shocking. I wasn't expecting it.
Mm.
Again, it seems to keep the nightmare going, where it's like everything's become so surreal and intense now. And is this even happening? Is it the old, oh, she's fallen asleep and actually this is all a dream? But it makes sense, I think, as a payoff as well. And what's great is it starts to make you think, were they right all along? And she just didn't realise that she actually was already a witch.
Mm.
Or was she masking it? I just love how, yeah, it sort of like creates that ambiguity that you then start sort of like applying yourself retrospectively to everything you've seen already. That's sort of like the literal kind of take on it is that, yeah, she became a witch, was a witch. I think it's interesting then to think, what does it mean in terms of like the context of, you know, the abuse that she's suffered, the mistrust of her family, that you see her basically turning on them and embracing that which they, you know, kind of applied on her, pushed on her. She kind of just has to You know, she's marginalised, like they've been marginalised from their community. She's marginalised from within the family and is left with only one option.
Mm.
Embrace the hate.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I think that is part of it. It's the idea, yeah, of she, it's not that she turned to sin, it's that she was forced to sin, basically. That
yeah.
She was perceived as a sinner and as a witch. And by the end of it, you just think, well, you know, fuck it, basically.
yeah.
You know, just go with it. I think, yeah, that idea of like, and that's kind of part of it, because you feel like she's almost wrestling with what she views as sin and all this stuff. But there's also, I think there's an element here where she is to do with the role of women, basically, and how it's very much, it's not just to do with witches, but it's to do with how women are perceived, especially when they come of age, basically.
Yeah.
And especially when they're seen as a source of sin, for the fact that it's like victim blaming, like, because yeah. she's so pretty and sexy that it's her fault for being like that, and that she
yeah.
pulls the sins of others rather than it's them being sinful. It's actually put all the blames put on her, which is literally what happens during the course of the film.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah, I see that.
Mm.
In that regard, it's a bit like this film. I can't remember what it's called. Is it Haxan?
Don't know.
Have you seen that?
No.
I saw it a couple of years ago at the Prince Charles. It's a film that is from 1922.
Right.
And it's kind of all about witchcraft through the ages.
Right.
But what's fantastic about it is that at the end, basically like the last 5 minutes, you realise, okay, what they do then is they draw a parallel with the treatment of women in 1922. And then watching that in like 2019, it's like, wow, I draw another parallel. But it is kind of like, look, this is how, because you're meant to be repulsed and appalled by how these women are treated.
Yeah.
And then they go, here we are in 1922, and this is how we as a society still behave towards women who exhibit any kind of deviation from, you know, the norm of what society expects of them. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, it's very similar, actually, film in a way,
mm.
in terms of, like, the like content and themes.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting film. Again, I recommend it to anyone.
Yeah. So would I. Yeah, I think there's also that thing of like, just, I don't know, classic teenage rebellion, but also like the fact that the fact that she wants to find her independence, and the fact that she's not bought into this whole religious way of life, especially her father's version of religion and all this stuff, doesn't necessarily mean that you're a sinner or whatever, but almost like that this Satan figure is kind of like tempting her away from that, you know, religion, lifestyle, whatever. But, and also like at the end, I think the fact that it's like these women laughing, dancing, whatever, and then she's kind of been brought up with the euphoria of it all, is, I think, the part of the reason that it looks jubilant. It's quite a jubilant ending on a yeah. horrific film, when it
yeah.
is also like disturbs you as a viewer as well, because essentially yeah, it's a joyous, weird celebration thing, but she has accepted evil and she's become the evil part of it, but in her own, I don't know. So it's quite strange.
Yeah, there's quite a few films recently that have kind of adopted that technique,
mm.
which, you know, it does chill you. What's that one? The one that's a bit like The Wicker Man.
Kill List.
Son. Yeah. No, it's got, I can't remember her name now. It's called Summer, not Summersby.
Sorry, you're talking about Midsummer.
Midsummer, that's yeah. the one.
Ari Aster again.
That kind of thing, that vibe, mm. where you're like, oh, hang on, they like it.
Yeah.
Didn't expect that.
Yeah, I think with that...
That's undermined my expectations.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because... So on this podcast, I did a whole episode on Midsommar with me and I like researched it to death and also gave a lot of what I thought all the imagery was through it. And that's been quite highly regarded by peers because of that. But the same vein, at least with that one, at least with Midsommar, it's a, how do I put this? It feels cathartic. And this does also feel cathartic. Yeah. But you, in Midsommar, you kind of weirdly want it to happen.
You do, it's the logical and emotional payoff.
Exactly. Whereas with this, it's kind of a bit like out of nowhere, almost, I guess. Like it's a bit unexpected in a weird way. You don't know where it's going. So it's a good conclusion, but it's not one that you were kind of primed for, if that makes sense.
No. I mean, you've basically just seen the utter, complete destruction of an entire family.
Yes.
And you sort of, I suppose a bit of you wants to sort of think she's going to now somehow revenge herself or something.
Yeah.
And so actually it's like, oh my, it just leaves you with a bit of a weight in your stomach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's it. As you said, like, you don't know if she was a witch all along now at this point. You guess not. You'd like to think not, but yeah, you're not quite sure. Or she's like just taking on all the sins of the entire family basically upon her shoulders. Could be that as well. It's also there's also that classic horror trope, I guess, of the sticks, as it were, like, you know, like you have with a lot of like, well, talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre the other day, but like that whole idea of like when you're away from society and all this stuff, how the world is actually a scary place and the inhabitants within it. And that, you know, Mother Nature herself is actually quite terrifying. In its own way, and that's what kind of witches are all about, aren't they supposed to be? I don't know. One with nature and whatever.
It just taps into some really fundamental primal fears, this film.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. Like, there's nothing scarier than a fucking forest, like, in all honesty. Like, you know, I find them terrifying at night. I find it weird when people are like, we're going to go to the woods at night by ourselves. And I'm like, you're just asking to be fucking murdered. It's the whole mystery of it all. It's weird, at the same time it's great. So I guess that's kind of it. I know you kind of went through it quite a lot there. One of the few things I found quite interesting is as we're saying, like, Eggers did a lot of research on the film, on background for the film and tales and stuff like that. He shot it in a very remote location in Canada.
I was going to ask that earlier.
Yeah.
It shot. I was thinking New England, but obviously not.
No, yeah, shot in Canada, Ontario, I want to say. And apparently they were waiting for it to be... They shot the whole thing when it was overcast. So they kept having... Every time they had like a sunny day or whatever, they would have to wait until it was overcast before they could shoot again, because they wanted it, I think it was all filmed in natural light. They wanted it purposefully like gloomy.
But they've done something to wash it out, haven't they?
Well, it would have been graded, etc. But they, but yeah, in terms of actual light source,
it looks gloomy.
Yeah. And that's why they went for it to be naturally overcast the whole time. So there's a constant gloom and darkness, shadow throughout the whole thing. Which I thought was quite interesting. I haven't really got much else to say about it, I guess. As I said, like, you could go to town and do lots of research on the specifics of how what is in there relates to real life or whatever, you know, or, you know, or documentation of real life and all this, if you want to go down that route. It is super interesting. And it's one of, it's a great, you know, first feature debut for this guy.
It is great. That's what we think. But what does the internet say? Should we look at some reviews?
All right, let's look at some reviews.
I hate it.
You know, I like to start with the bad ones.
Yeah, always. Go for it.
Andre gave it one star.
Right.
It is just boring. Many people might say to you, the movie is interesting. Probably because it criticizes religious fanaticism for the most part. And that is somehow interesting. Aside from this obvious blow to religious people, the movie does not offer much. It is not scary, and it brings nothing interesting about witches. So, I'm not really sure what he is expecting.
I mean, this is a general thing from this film, when other people have seen it and come back to me, they're like, nothing happened. They're like, it's boring. And it's like, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know, like people, especially like around this time, it's like Sinister, Conjuring. I actually quite liked Conjuring, but like, you know, that kind of ilk, Purge.
Yeah.
It's all like, this is the kind of shit that they're used to. And then The Witch came along and they would have gone thinking, oh yeah, it's going to be some fucking cool horror shit. And then they're instead faced with like a language they can't even fucking understand. To begin with, so it must be a bit tough, I guess, for the average moviegoer, but well, did well enough, I suppose.
Wrinkly gave it 1 star. Disappointing. Mediocre, to say the least. I've found episodes of The Munsters more scary.
Well,
you're a fan of The Munsters?
I did used to watch it. You should look at the how they filmed. I think it was Monsters, maybe it was the Addams Family. How they would film all that, because you know, obviously it was in black and white. To get the right shades of greys and blacks and whites, it was actually extremely colourful, the sets.
I've heard that, but I haven't seen any pictures.
Yeah, there's pictures out there. You should look.
I should look.
A lot of like bright purples and all this. Ah. So yeah, to get the right look. Quite interesting, isn't it? They use certain colours. But yeah, you should check out how colourful those sets were.
I used to love The Munsters when I was a kid, and this has reminded me. I used to have a Munsters video. I used to tape the episodes.
Right.
And this is a really, really, really early memory for me. This might be pre-school, so like 3 or something, 3 or 4. Gave my video, lent it to a boy to watch. And when we went to get it, they went, oh, sorry, we recorded the football over the top.
Of course.
Because we didn't have another tape and we wanted to record the football.
So we recorded your accident. Tape?
They were like, we need a tape to record the football. That's, they were like, yeah, shit. Sorry.
That's really out of order. You just want your own fucking tapes.
A formative experience in my life.
Yeah, don't lend anyone anything. Listen,
I've got a few quite angry comments here.
All right, got them.
Terrible.
Right.
If you are looking for a good horror like I had read and thought this was, this ain't it, lol. An awful attempt... I don't think the director or scriptwriter knew what the film was trying to be. I really was waiting the entire film thinking this is just a build-up to something spectacular. But guess what? Nothing happened. I'd give 0 if I could, but that's bad. I threw it in the trash because I didn't want it in my DVD collection, lol.
Lol.
Philip Brewerton, what a twat you are. What a steaming twat. JJ, 1 star. Do not waste your money. Seriously, it's terrible. It's worse than drowning Mona.
His Mona.
His mum. It's worse than that time I drowned my mum. Is it? Yeah, no idea.
Is it not Moana? Moana. How's it spelled?
Mona. Maybe it's a film that we're not aware of.
Drowning Mona. No.
Yeah. Anyway, apparently this is worse than Drowning Mona.
Oh, dear.
Here's the review. Both me and my girlfriend are now angry as we have wasted an hour. We persevered a while but couldn't get through this dreadful pile of poo. And 3:49 on this awful film.
Oh, dear.
Why even bother making this garbage? Honestly, what is the point? If you like poor acting, inaudible dialogue, lots of shouting that you really can't make out, but will definitely find irritating, dark scenery, irritating young children whining and whinging, then this is the film for you. Otherwise, just give it a miss and save yourself the inevitable anger at being duped by a film that should not have been made. It is by far the worst film me and my girlfriend have ever seen. Extremely angry that it even exists and that others will likely also waste their hard-earned money on it. Please don't watch this film. You will certainly regret it.
Oh, dear. Guess he didn't like it then. I like how he gets angry about it. He would rather something doesn't exist than it exists and people might like it.
Demented. He only spent £3.49 on it as well.
Fucking chill, mate. Chill out.
JJ, do you think it's JJ Abrams?
Maybe, yeah. Don't surprise me. Okay, cool. Well, I guess that's it.
We could have a little look at your LP in the corner.
Oh, okay. Well, I can try and drag it down. I might be able to get it from here. Let's have a look in the corner. Okay, well, here we go. The Vvvitch. Just a black file. We're probably getting it out. But yeah.
Who's the music by?
The music is by Mark Corvin. Apparently, he was asked to try and make it as traditional as possible and improvise, basically, as you'll notice, there's a lot of like chanting and weird noises and all this.
Yeldy folk instruments that actually sound quite strange to our modern ears.
Exactly. It's on the back, you'll see there's a little thing of like the devil. I guess who's got like wings and then a man and a woman kind of looking at him from older times.
Looks like an old woodcut printing block.
Yeah, exactly. I've got some of the title tracks. A Witch Stole Sam. So that's pretty, you know, on the nose there. To be honest, Foster the Children.
A theme for your life.
Yeah. Foster the Children, I thought it was quite funny to have as a track name, seeing as that was that band that had that one song and then disappeared. Caleb Seduction, and then the track. What I love is track 7, Caleb is lost. Track 8, Caleb Seduction. Track 9, Caleb's death.
The Caleb suite.
Why not? There's one that's about a track of Isle of Wight, which is, I don't really understand that. The Goat and the Mayhem, Follow the Goat, Witch's Coven, Standish.
And who released that?
Sony, Milan Records, Milan Records, A24, obviously the people. And I got that. That's pretty much one of the first soundtracks I actually got. I don't really know why. I remember me and my daughter one day when we were in, when lockdown had just started, I decided that she wanted to make a film on my phone. And we did like a horror thing called Red. Did I share it with you?
You shared it. It was quite funny.
And I used music from The Witch on that.
Okay. Which, that's what that was.
Yeah, which was quite freaky. It was quite funny because I sent it to another mate of mine who's got a family. And was like, oh yeah, me and Edie just made a film. Have a look. And he said that he was watching it with their kids. And then after about 30 seconds, they switched it off.
Why? Because it was too scary.
Yeah, because it's freaking them out. It's like, yeah, it's kind of the point. I didn't realise you were going to like sit down and have a fucking family viewing. Just sending it to you. And you're going, hey kids, let's all sit around and watch this site, watch this film. Edie loved it. Edie wanted to watch it again and again, even as horrific as it was.
Made it. She was the director, wasn't she?
Yeah, she had...
You're like the producer.
I was kind of producing it, yeah. I did some of the camera work, put it that way. but yeah, it was her thing. And I obviously edited it together. She's not going to do it. She was 3 at the time. But yeah, it's quite funny.
One day it will see for more widespread release.
Yeah.
Listeners can put on a B-side, look out for that one.
B-side or something or other. Yeah, so I guess that's it, guys. That was The Witch.
That's The Witch.
The Village. Yeah, take a look at it. For more viewing, I'd also recommend The Lighthouse. And yeah, take a dive into A24 stuff. Yeah, have a look at Ari Aster stuff, Hereditary, Midsommar, as we've discussed as well. All that stuff, all that kind of new slow burn, proper filmic horror is well worth looking up. And yeah, Robert Eggers.
And if you like historical witch stuff and commentary on women's role in society, Haxan. 1922.
Did you know, I forgot to tell you this, you know where my old flat was? I won't tell you where, obviously. Do you remember where I used to live in my flat?
Yeah.
Opposite there, on the literally on the other side of the road, is the back of a pool club. And apparently on that, underneath that pool club was a dunking thing for witches.
Ooh.
Yeah. And like hundreds of witches or whatever were sentenced or whatever there, I guess. Yeah, it's just literally over the road. I told my wife that and she freaked the fuck out. What do you think
happens? There's quite a lot of them, aren't there, around like the south of England. There's a lot of places. I remember we used to, you know, when I was a kid, when we'd go like Surrey, Kent, Sussex.
Mm.
There's loads of ducking stalls around the place, which, you know, just tells you how widespread it was.
Yeah, I think this was the county's most prolific spot or something stupid like that. There's some kind of, I don't think it's just that it was a spot. It's something about something else extra about it, basically. But yeah, it is surprising. That whole thing, the whole thing of witches is strange. So yeah, it's worth checking out. If you guys are interested in all that and historical stuff, I'm sure there's loads of interviews with Robert Eggers you could take a look at, and he would go a bit more in depth on his research into it and all this stuff. I listened to a fair bit after I watched the film originally. And was really, I found it very enlightening about how life was back then and the idea of like the stories, basically the folklore and all this stuff of things that happened, but also stuff like real, genuine, mysterious, weird things that happened back then that have kind of been lost in time.
Still unexplained.
Yeah, exactly. Some weird shit. Which
it's a fertile area for creativity.
Yeah, for sure. Make you think about witches differently. Cool. Well, that's it, guys. Dan, any last words?
Yeah. If you guys check out the film, or if you've already seen it, just let us know what you thought, and let us know if you thought we were on the nose, or if we got it all wrong.
Yes. Or maybe we're on the wart at the end of the nose. Cool. All right. Thanks, guys. And we'll see you on the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram @anewwinter, Twitter @anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.